Chapter 3. Picket ships detected, Ifrania's announcement stilled the activity on the Strategium. Three destroyers, overlapping sensor sweeps, detecting plasma trails of three more vessels, probably light cruiser class, she continued. The Avenger was only 2 days from reaching Translation Point, far enough away from the gravitic pull of Istvan's star to make a safe warp jump. For the last 3 days, the net thrown up by the traitor ships had been closing in, but this was the closest they had come, only a few hundred thousand kilometers away. Korax glanced at a screen in the arm of the command throne, showing the relative positions of the vessels. In a moment, he had assessed their trajectories and the coverage of the scanner sweeps.
"Too close to alter course," he declared. "We will have to make a dash for the translation point. Shut down all auxiliary systems, impose blacklight protocols, divert power savings to the engines."
A series of affirmatives chorused from the assembled staff and legionaries. The Primarch turned his attention to Commander Bran.
"I want you and Agapito to make a stern-to-prow inspection. Ensure all support systems are at minimal output. Pass the word to Solaro and Aloni to enforce the blacklight protocols."
The Primarch raised his voice.
"I want full energy balance in 10 minutes. No later."
"Aye, Lord. I'll see to it," replied Bran.
"Detecting launch, Lord Korax," said Ifrania. "Picket ships are firing torpedoes. Wide dispersal."
"Direction,"
snapped Korax, returning to his place behind the command throne, eyes fixed to the small data screen.
"Crossing pattern," Ifrania replied. "Even at our increased speed, they will pass ahead of us."
"Clever bastards,"
muttered Bran from behind the Primarch.
"Hoping to get lucky with blind firing." "Save 3% of energy output for manoeuvring, just in case," said Korax. "All personnel to attend battle stations."
"Weapons, Lord Korax?" asked Ifrania.
Her expression was as calm as ever, but the Primarch detected the slightest hint of tension in her voice.
"Shall we reserve any output for the weapons batteries?"
"No,"
replied the Primarch after a moment's thought.
"We won't be able to fight our way out of this one if we're discovered."
"And the void shield transformers, Lord Korax? Shall I have them running on standby?"
"No,"
Korax said.
"All power to reflex shields and engines. Nothing else. If they hit us, it will be too late anyway."
Taking the shield transformers offline would add almost 4 minutes to the time required for the reflex shields to revert to defensive void shields. Extra minutes during which untold damage might be incurred by the Avenger. For the first time since he had come aboard, Korax noticed hesitation in the controller. It lasted only a heartbeat before Ifrania nodded and turned to the task at hand. He heard the doors opening and glanced over his shoulder to see Bran departing on his inspection. He checked the display again. They were 250,000 kilometers from the traitor picket. 7 more vessels had been picked up by the low-band sensor screen, creating 3 layers of defense between the battle barge and the safe translation point. If there was even a momentary blip in the reflex shields, or one of the torpedoes caught the Avenger in its blast, the Primarch's ship would quickly find itself surrounded by enemies. He could not outpace his foes, and he could not outfight them. Korax's only option was to hold his nerve and stay focused on evading detection. It was something he had been good at since he was a boy, and he was not going to start making rash decisions now. Blacklight protocols meant the complete shutdown of all non-essential systems. One by one, life support, lighting, heating and other environmental systems powered down to their minimum levels, just enough for the human crew to survive. Even the artificial gravity was lessened to 1/2 Terran normal, freeing up valuable power for the plasma drives. In the busy transport compartments in the depths of the hold, nearly 1,500 legionaries were packed together as darkness descended. The battle barge had been designed to carry a fraction of that number. Space had been made in storage holds, weapon bays, and amongst the gantries and decks of the engine rooms. Squads had found room in maintenance, crawlways, and in stairwells, and several dozen elevator and conveyor shafts had been decommissioned to provide even more space. Even with such measures, the warriors of the Raven Guard had little freedom of movement. Only the main access corridors had been kept clear to allow runners easy access between the Strategium and other essential stations. Amongst the throng, Alpharius watched the lights dimming, and then going out. Of course, he was not the Alpharius, but by some clever mind programming and a little psychic intervention by the Legion's Librarius, he had chosen to forget his real name. To all intents and purposes, he now was Alpharius. And he was a little concerned. He sat with his adopted squad on a gangway above the plasma reactors, clad in his armor. Environment warning sigils lit up in his display as the air thinned and gravity lessened. Without thought, he gave a subvocal command to power up the auto-senses of his helmet.
"What do you think you're doing?"
Alpharius turned his head as Commander Aloni's voice ran along the gantry. He realized the captain was talking to him.
"You know what blacklight means," continued Aloni. "Power to minimal. Do you realize what kind of energy signature 1,500 power armored legionaries are going to give off? Everybody pay attention. Everything is to be set to minimum output, lowest cycle. Rebreathing, moisture recycling, locomotion, everything. No communications, no external address, no movement."
Nodding his compliance, Alpharius powered down his suit, becoming an immobile statue of ceramite, plasteel, and adamantium. His secondary heart began to beat, compensating for the lower temperature outside, and his multi-lung inflated, enabling him to cope with air that had not been properly recycled. Around him, the others were doing the same. Here, out by the reactors, all life support was being withdrawn, leaving each legionary cocooned within his own personal environment. Artificial night descended, broken only by the wink of illuminated gauges and monitor lights on the twin reactors 50 meters below the walkway. Moisture began to ice over the armor of the legionaries, thin trails of vapor dribbling from face masks and backpack exhaust vents. Locked inside his suit, Alpharius realized how precarious his position was. Discovery was not an immediate problem. What with the reorganization of the Legion and the general unwillingness of the others to discuss what had happened on Istvan, it had been simple enough to take up his new role. His face was still sore from the grafting surgery, particularly where the implanted flesh of his new face met his original skin at the base of his neck and around his throat. The bone beneath had been remolded and ached, while tendons and muscles that had been shortened or lengthened felt raw beneath his stolen skin. Alpharius swallowed, remembering where the body had been found. No more than 5 minutes dead, leg blasted off by a whirlwind rocket, spine snapped across a ridge of rock. The apothecaries had acted as quickly as possible. For decades, the Alpha Legion had striven to look alike, modelling themselves on their Primarch, glorying in their anonymity. To have black hair, to have distinctive features, and eyes that were a pale green, was a new sensation for him. And the memories lurked inside his mind, too. He knew a little about the legionary whose persona he had taken. He had taken in the meat of the fallen Raven Guard, allowing his amorphogear to dissect and absorb the information about his prey. Bolstered by the abilities of the librarians, abilities forbidden by the decree at Nykaia but still widely practiced by the Alpha Legion, he had gathered what fragments he could of the dead legionary's life. He could feel them. Flashes of images, snippets of conversation. More than that, Alpharius could feel how his new persona had felt. He had been proud, a veteran of the Lycaeus uprising, and had earned distinction with the Raven Guard since they had been united with their Primarch. The memories itched as well, jarring inside his thoughts, confusing him occasionally. Over the time he had spent fleeing across Istvan V with his new comrades, he had learned their names and faces and the way they fought. The most fraught time had been the first few days, when commands had been issued in code phrases and formations called out in battle lingua that he did not know, a language evolved on deliverance that he had not grown up with. Yet he had been picked for this mission because of his gift with languages, his quick mind, and his instinct for adaptation. His deficiencies had been covered by the efficiency and cohesion of the Raven Guard themselves, and soon he had managed to blend in during the hit-and-run attacks, avoiding the suspicion of his squad comrades as well as the deadly attention of those pursuing the Raven Guard. All of that seemed to be poised on the verge of pointlessness now, as he sat immobile over a reactor that would turn into a small star the moment it was breached, aboard a warship ghosting through an enemy fleet, protected by nothing more than a few meters of bonded plasteel and adamantium. One lucky hit, and he would be incinerated, along with the rest of those aboard the Avenger. He did not know how many others of the Alpha Legion had been successful in taking their place. He did not know if he was the only one, or if there were dozens of them. It did not matter. For the moment, he was alone, and had to act accordingly. He had to do all he could to stay alive, remain undetected, observe Korax, and get in touch with Omegon once they returned to Deliverance. As fervently as he had ever hoped for success, he now hoped for his allies to fail. Whoever it was out there chasing the ship, Word-bearers, Alpha Legion, World Eaters, Sons of Horus, Iron Warriors, Imperial Army, Alpharius wished them every disaster that he could imagine. Engine failure, outbreaks of disease, weapons malfunction, anything that would stop that one lucky hit from eradicating his existence. He was prepared to give his life for his Primarch and his Legion, but not this way, not without a foe to fight and a mission to protect. It would be such a pointless way to die, he thought, as the sound of a detonation echoed dully through the hull.
Nova cannon shell, reported Afrania. 6,000 kilometers, starboard bow.
Korax did not react immediately. Two cruisers had joined the destroyers, the growing enemy flotilla saturating the intervening gulf of space with torpedoes, missiles and plasma blasts in an attempt to catch the Avenger in a blanket of fire. It was not a particularly effective tactic. The volume of void they were trying to cover was vast, and they were trying to get very lucky, or frighten Korax into an act that would betray his location. That the traitors knew the battle barge was in their vicinity was beyond doubt. But the question that now concerned Korax was whether they knew any more than that. The Nova cannon detonation had not been so close as to convince him it had been deliberately aimed at the Avenger, but neither had the margin of the miss been enough that it was outside the normal margin of error for such a long-ranged shot. Could he afford to wait for a second plasma explosion to prove things one way or the other?
Decline by 50,000 meters, 3 degrees starboard, he snapped to the men at the helm controls.
Navigational shields absorbing plasma residuals and debris, announced another crewman. Nearing reflex shield tolerance levels.
Korax gritted his teeth. The low-power navigational shields were usually in place to ward away micro-asteroids and other spaceborne debris, but now the Nova cannon blast was swamping them with more than they were intended to handle. If he increased power to prevent any of a shockwave reaching the Avenger, the energy spike would reveal their position.
"Ride it," he said as the ship started shuddering around him. "Implement previous order."
The battle barge made best use of the space available, using all three dimensions to change course away from the point at which the Nova cannon had been targeted. It was not an eventuality Korax had expected. The Nova cannon was still considered highly experimental by most Imperial forces, and few commanders would allow one to be mounted on their vessel.
"Can you calculate the launching vessel?" he asked Afrania.
"Just detecting a third-line class ship, Lord Korax,"
the Strategium controller replied.
"Probably a grand cruiser, approaching from almost directly astern, broadcasting Iron Warriors identifiers."
"Typical,"
Korax whispered. "Give one of Perturabo's captains the chance to mount a bigger gun, and he would snatch your hand off to take it."
"Detecting another Nova cannon launch,"
warned Afrania. In her worry, she had forgotten his title, something the Primarch had thought impossible. Korax noticed her face paling and the knuckles of her thin hands whitening, supporting calipers flexing as she grabbed the edge of the display console, expecting an impact. There was no way a warning could be given to the crew without giving away the battle barge's position, and if the Nova cannon scored an unlikely direct hit, no amount of bracing and preparation would save lives.
"Passing to port, 15,000 kilometres and increasing, Lord Korax,"
Afrania said, smiling slightly and relaxing her grip.
"Detonation detected, 70,000 kilometres away."
"It is safe to assume the fire is random. Set in a course, for closest translation point.
Korax had noted the two separate detonation points and filed them away in his memory. It seemed likely the Iron Warriors were using a firing formula to calculate their target points. Three or four more detonations would allow Korax to calculate the formula in retrospect and take appropriate action to decrease the odds of another close call. Other than that, there was nothing else to do except continue to hope for the best. The Avenger continued on, dipping and rising, zigzagging its way towards the translation point, cutting an elusive path through the net of traitor ships. At times, Korax headed directly towards the enemy, passing within 10,000 kilometers of battlecruisers and frigates, trusting the reflex shields to mask any emission that would betray their presence. The cordon tightened, the glimmers on the traitor's scanner displays drawing in more and more vessels, chasing ghost returns that were little more than fuzzy mirages against the backdrop energy haze of the universe. Sitting in the darkness of his requisitioned command chamber, Korax felt the change in vibrations that signaled another course alteration. They were less than half a day from the translation point. It was tempting to make the warp jump now and take the risk of gravimetric interference, but he stayed patient. There had been some close calls. Torpedoes unleashing their warheads a few thousand kilometers from the Avenger. Last-moment changes in direction to avoid enemy scans. Nova cannon detonations that had pushed the navigational shields to the limit. Random reactor spikes that had brought the battle barge to a virtual halt to compensate for the energy flare-ups. The Primarch had taken all of this without a moment's fear. There was no room for error, but there was also no room for uncertainty. His situation was very stark. Escape and survive, or be detected and destroyed. Such extremes made clarity simple and drove away other thoughts that might have clouded his judgment. For the moment, they were exploiting a small break in the traitor cordon and had had several hours of unopposed travel. Blacklight protocol was still in full operation, and so Korax sat at the large command console, staring at the blank screens and dead displays, his eyes picking out the details of the room in the smallest glow from blinking red standby lights and the gleam from the doorway leading to the strategium. He was used to waiting. Over long years, he had learned the lessons of patience, of precise timing. During hundreds of battles, he had known the moment to act and the moment to pause, and had known victory every time because of those decisions. The massacre of the drop site had caught him off guard. It troubled the Primarch that he had perceived nothing of the traitorous intent of his fellow Legion commanders. Sitting in the dark, alone with his thoughts, he wondered if he had been blinded to their treachery by some weakness in himself. Had he been too trusting, ignored subtle signs of his brother's intent, been overconfident? What had happened had been unthinkable, and that was part of the problem for Korax. Should it have been so outlandish that he had never considered having to fight his brothers? He had been sent with the others to Istvan to bring Horus to account. Surely, he should have wondered whether Horus had acted entirely alone. Had the shock of the War Master's turn against the Emperor befuddled him, caused him to blunder into an obvious trap? The questions were all the harder, because they were unanswerable. Another vibration, another course change. The hours ticked past. The Primarch needed no data screen to tell him what was happening. He had a picture in his mind of the Avenger and the ships arrayed against it, their courses plotted in his thoughts as accurately as any schematic. Any notable divergence from the picture he had drawn would be reported, and he had received no such communication from Ifrania. The complex web being woven to catch the Avenger was not tight enough. There were always gaps. Patience. Hours. Days. Weeks of waiting. Years, in fact, when he had been making his preparations, hidden amongst the prisoners of Lycaeus. There was something of a purity in the stillness, something energizing about the solitude. His wounds still pained him, occasional stabs of sensation that broke through the walls of his semi-mesmeric state. He would shift his weight to relieve the stress on ravaged ribs, to move pressure away from damaged organs. Korax's engineered body could withstand incredible amounts of damage, and yet there was something deeper than the physical wounds that afflicted the Primarch. The pain was something he forced himself to endure as a reminder of his failure. He suffered a hurt that no superhuman body could rectify, a grievous injury that the attention of the apothecaries would not cure. Until he could bring to an end that internal agony, he would not allow his body to heal. Roused from his contemplation by one such brief burst of pain, Korax activated a data screen. Analyzing the intersecting courses displayed on the monitor, Korax spotted something he had not seen before, a convergence of possibilities brought about by some minor alterations in the enemy's disposition a few hours ago. There was a gap. Or rather, there was not a gap, but a coming together of four traitor ships. The wash from their own plasma drives, the emissions of their reactors, would obscure the Avenger and provide a pathway to the transition point earlier than he had planned, if he dared take it. Seeing the possibilities unfolding, Korax stood up, re-examining the chart. He was sure he was correct. Passing from inaction to motion in moments, the Primarch leaned over towards the communicator activation stud. He stopped with his finger millimeters from the switch. Korax weighed up the situation once more, cooling his excitement, ignoring the lure of sudden activity. The maneuver would bring the Avenger within range of the guns of at least three enemy vessels. If he changed to the new course, they would be committed. Any significant alteration by the enemy would change the dynamic, revealing the Raven Guard's position dangerously close to the foe. He discarded the idea. Though Korax was eager to reach the relative safety of the warp, eager to do anything proactive, there was more to be said for caution than daring at the moment. He had gone after Lorgar at the drop site, driven by a thirst for revenge, briefly abdicating his responsibility as a Legion commander. Had that emotive response cost his Legion, more of them falling to the ambush than would have done had he been commanding the retreat, he would not act rashly again. The most important thing was that he had lived, and that was as true now as then. Half a day was not important. Survival was important. That need to survive, that animal instinct to keep drawing breath, had driven him on, filled him with purpose. He would not lie down and accept death willingly. Even now, his Legion almost wiped out, his enemies outnumbering his allies, Korax knew that he could not give up. His duty now was to keep the Raven Guard alive, no matter the temptations and instincts to act with resolve and daring. On Deliverance, when it had been called Lycaeus, there had been true desperation. Weaker men had fallen, and lesser men had balked at the task ahead. Not Korax. He had dragged Lycaeus, bloodied and screaming, into freedom, and not once doubted the righteousness of his effort. Why now did he wonder if he had the resolve to triumph? He sat immobile in the darkness once more. He liked the dark. The shadows had always been an ally. He might spend the last hours of his life like this, waiting, anticipating the next shudder of a course correction, expecting a knock at the door to bring a fresh report of the enemy's movements, trying not to relive the mistakes and horrors of Istvan. Trying, but failing. The room was dank with the smell of sweat, the air thick with the stench of his own fear. Marcus was more than happy to face any foe in an open fight, or even to stand firm while battleships destroyed each other with blasting broadsides. This war, the Raven Guard way of war, vexed his nerves and tightened his chest around his heart. The Prefector lay on his bunk, his eyes closed, wishing the ventilators could be activated to siphon away the filth of his perspiration. His hands trembled on his chest, his hair was lank across his brow, and the pillow and sheets were soaked beneath him. All it would take was one warhead to find the Avenger, and they would all be killed. Valerius was certain of it. The reflex shields provided no defense against a dozen megatons of atomic destruction. The walls vibrated with the shockwaves of distant detonations, thousands of kilometers away, yet all too close for the Prefector's liking. Palon was in the antechamber. Marcus could hear his short, panicked breaths and imagined his servant sitting in the corner of the room, hugging his knees to his chest. The Prefector understood well the dread that gripped his man, because he shared it. The bombardment had started less than half an hour ago. He had been sent from the Strategium by Korax as the first Nova Cannon shells had erupted, far from the battle barge, yet too close for comfort. As he had hurried down the corridors and descended seemingly endless stairwells, he had felt the ship vibrating beneath his tread, the metal of the handrails quivering under his fingers. He had tried not to run. The Raven Guard he had passed were unperturbed by their predicament, trusting their existence to the power of the reflex shields in a way that Marcus simply could not. He was Imperial Army, a Therion, and he was used to fighting an enemy he could see. His life entrusted to power fields or tank armor or the meters-thick walls of a bunker. He had endured artillery duels and orbital attacks, but nothing compared to the helplessness he felt right now. The darkness was absolute. No light could be lit. In a way, he was grateful. It was better that he was confined to quarters, where Lord Korax and the others could not see his cowardly reactions, could not hear his suppressed whimpers with each rattle of a passing shockwave. Yet it was also a nightmare to be alone. Pride might have helped him master the fear, had he been within sight of others. With just himself to impress, his resolve was revealed to be woefully weak. The darkness was as cloying as the sweaty air. It weighed heavily on his chest, pushing the wind from his lungs, throttling him. He choked and gasped and swung to the edge of the bed, booted feet touching upon the bare decking, arms hugged tight around his chest as he winced at another vibration that rattled from starboard to port, accompanied by creaks and cracks from the bulkheads around him. "This is insanity," he muttered. His words were a whisper, but echoed inside his head. Sanity had been a scarce resource of late for the Prefector. At first, he had been relieved that the nightmares had ended. The blissful oblivion of sleep had been returned to him, and he had embraced it. The sensation of relief had not lasted long. Barely a few days after the evacuation of Lord Korax and the Legion, Marcus's empty dreams had started to nag at him. He woke in the middle of the night watches, a void in his thoughts, feeling dragged down into an abyss. Soon he had come to fear the nights as much as when the fires and the cries of dying ravens had haunted him. It was not the searing hot terror, the paranoia that had gripped him before. It was a cold dread that trickled down his spine and sank to the bottom of his stomach. Alone in the dark of his cabin, that dread had returned, seeping out of the darkness while missiles and shells lit up the firmament beyond the steel and rockcrete walls. The nothing that awaited him was too much like the vacuum of space. In his dread, Marcus was convinced that he was going to die. Just as he had dreamt of the Raven Guard's predicament, now his sleeping thoughts were bringing him a vision of his doom. He would die alone, freezing in the void, swallowed by the emptiness of the universe. Marcus let out a whimpering moan and threw himself face first into the pillows and covers, trying to bury his head, striving to block out the emptiness that was leeching away his existence.
"That was a little too close," remarked Bran as a Nova Cannon shell blossomed into nuclear life a few thousand kilometers off the starboard bow. "Too close is a hit," replied Agapito. "Anything we survive is far enough away for me."
"Hush," said Lord Korax.
His voice was calm, his features expressionless, as he watched the dull glow of sensor readings on the primary display.
"I am thinking."
The Primarch had taken over the helm controls as soon as the latest traitor fusillade had started, guiding the Avenger along a safe course that only he himself could see. His mind, constantly calculating and adapting with each launch torpedo salvo and Nova Cannon detonation.
"Lord, we are heading to danger close proximity with an enemy cruiser," warned one of the attendants at the scanner array.
"I know,"
replied the Primarch, eyes locked on the display.
"Lord, they will detect our plasma wash if we pass that close,"
Controller Ifrania added, her tone quiet and respectful, yet tinged with concern.
"That is not all they will detect,"
Korax replied, turning to smile at the woman. He paused for a moment and then held up a finger.
"I judge that we have reached safe distance for translation."
"Lord?"
Ifrania's confusion was matched by Bran's. A sideways glance at Agapito and Aloni showed that his fellow commanders were tense, eyes narrowed.
"We will not be fleeing without a last remark to our enemies," said Korax.
"Should we power up the void shields and weapons batteries, Lord?" asked Afrania, hand hovering over the command terminal.
"No," said the Primarch. "I have something more dramatic in mind."
On the Strategium of the Valediction, Apostle Danask of the Word-Bearers was finding his latest duty a stretch on his patience. The joyful anarchy and slaughter of the dropsite attack seemed in distant memory after days of fruitless searching for the fleeing Raven Guard. His latest orders were no more exhilarating. For more than a day, his ship had been sporadically firing torpedo spreads into the area the War Master had ordered, with no result at all. It was a waste of time, and made all the more insulting because his brother legionaries were already en route to Kalth for their surprise visit to the Ultramarines. It was hard not to feel that this was in some way a punishment for some breach of Legion rules, of which he had not been made aware. Danask wondered if perhaps he had not been dedicated enough in his devotion to this new cause. He had noticed Cor Faeron looking at him strangely on occasion, and was sure that the Master of Faith was testing him in some fashion. He had offered no complaint when he had received his nonsensical orders, and had offered effusive praise to the Primarch for considering him for such an onerous but essential duty.
"Energy signature detected!"
The words of Cal Namir came as a triumphant shout from the scanner panels, snatching the Apostle from his thoughts.
"Where?"
demanded Danask, rising from the command throne. Sirens blared into life, shattering the quiet that had marked most of the patrol's duration.
"Almost on top of us! 2,000 kilometers to port!" announced Kalnamir. "Weapons batteries are powering up! Void shields at full potential!"
"Mask energy signature and get me a firm location! Brace for impact!"
snapped the Apostle, realizing that the enemy would only reveal himself to open fire. He heard Kalnamir mutter to himself, swearing under his breath.
"Speak up or stay silent, brother,"
rasped Danask. He was in no mood for his subordinate's grumblings. He punched in a command on the arm panel of the throne and brought up a real-time view of the enemy's rough location. A shimmer against the stars betrayed the presence of the Raven Guard ship.
"The scanners must have malfunctioned. This makes no sense,"
Kalnamir said. He checked his displays again and then turned to look at Danask with his eyes wide from shock.
"Signature is a warp core spike, Commander!"
On the screen, the enemy battle barge came into view, dangerously close, black against the distant pale glimmer of Istvan's star. Moments later, the space around the vessel swirled with power, a writhing rainbow of energy engulfing the ship from stem to stern.
"Take evasive action!"
yelled Danask, but even as he barked the words, he knew it was too late. The Raven Guard ship disappeared, swallowed by the warp translation point it had opened. The warp hole roiled wider and wider, washing over the Valediction. Danask felt the blow of warp energy moving through him, a pressure inside his head, accompanied by a violent lurching of the cruiser.
"We're caught in her wake!"
announced Kalnamir. Somewhat unnecessarily, thought Danask. The Valediction shuddered violently as the spume of warp energy flowed past, earthing itself through the void shields. Tendrils of immaterial power lashed through the vessel. Coils of kaleidoscopic energy erupting from the walls, ceiling and floor, accompanied by the distant noise of screaming and unnatural howls. More warning horns sounded a moment before an explosion tore apart the stern of the ship, the void shield generators overloaded by the surge. Secondary fires erupted along the flanks of the Valediction, detonating ammunition stores for the weapons batteries, opening up ragged wounds in the sides of the vessel. The shriek of tearing metal accompanied fiery blasts of igniting atmosphere gouting from the massive holes to port and starboard. The Valediction heaved and bucked, artificial gravity fluctuating madly, tossing Danask and the others on the Strategium to the ceiling and back to the floor. To the right of the Apostle, a communications attendant fell badly, snapping his neck on the mesh decking. Then there was stillness and silence. The shielding of the reactors had held firm, and no further explosions occurred. Several minutes of disorientation ensued, during which the Strategium staff busied themselves getting damage reports. The scanners were all offline due to the warp wash, the dozens of screens surrounding Danask all grey and lifeless.
get me helm control,"
he rasped. Anti-damage procedures continued for some time. Danask's head throbbed, an ache in the base of his skull growing in intensity until it threatened to be a significant distraction.
"That could have been worse," said Kalnamir. "At least we survived."
Blood started to drip from the word-bearer's eyes and nose, thick rivulets of crimson streaking Namir's face. The blood vessels in his eyes were thickening, and his skin was becoming stretched and thin. Danask held a gauntleted hand to his nose as he tasted blood, and saw a drop of red on his fingertip. One of the weapons console attendants gave a scream and lurched away from his panel, his robes afire with blue flames. The man flailed madly as others tried to help him, pushing him to the floor and swatting at the flames with cloaks and gloved hands.
"Get them off me! My face! Get them off my face!"
shrieked another serf, tearing at his eyes and cheeks with his fingers, stumbling from his stool. A subscreen flickered into life at one end of the scanning panel. Danask knew what he would see, but looked anyway. Outside the ship, the stars had disappeared, replaced by a whirling vortex of impossible energies that hurt his eyes to look at, even through the digitization of the display. They were in the warp, without their Geller fields, unprotected. As realization settled in the Apostle's numbed mind, he felt something clawed, scratching inside his gut. He dared not look down. A detached part of his brain marveled at what had happened. To engage warp engines close enough to drag the valediction into the immaterium, yet far enough away not to destroy the cruiser, was an incredibly difficult thing to do. He wondered what manner of man could do such a thing. Around him, madness reigned. He felt apart from it all as his serfs and legionaries howled and roared, limbs cracking, warp energy swirling through their bodies, distorting and tearing. He realized he had asked the wrong question. Exposure to the warp was the most horrific death that could be visited upon any living creature. It was not what manner of man could do such a thing. It was what manner of man would do such a thing. He never got to answer his own question. Moments later, a horned, red-skinned beast erupted from his innards, splaying out his fused ribs and chest, his twin hearts held between fanged teeth. Danask's agonized scream, so inhuman, so unlike a legionary, joined with the cries of the rest of his crew. They were safe in the warp, as safe as the warp could ever be, though the Avengers' navigators had complained about a roiling tempest as soon as they translated. The Astronomicon, the light that guided them through the immaterial ether, was all but obscured by storms of immense proportions. Korax had told them to do the best they could. Their goal was simple: head to the source of the Emperor's light, and they would reach Terra. The Primarch stood on the Strategium with his commanders, the pickup for the internal Vox system small in the palm of his hand. Blacklight protocols were over, the reactors running at full capacity. The Strategium was awash with light, bright after the days of gloom. The Primarch's disposition did not match the brightening of the environment. Hesitating, Korax wondered what he would say to his warriors. What words of encouragement could he speak when he felt so devoid of hope himself? The traitors had struck so well. Their concealed blow aimed with deadly effect. It seemed unlikely that they could be stopped. He had given many speeches in his life to rouse the weary to fight on, to inspire his warriors to acts of great bravery. All of the words that sprang to mind now seemed to the Primarch to be hollow platitudes. It did not matter. He drove out the doubt with a surge of will. Now was the time when he needed most to display the leadership for which he had been created. It was at times like this, not in the heat of battle where his physical abilities could sway the day, that his true worth was judged. He was the Primarch of the Raven Guard, and his legionaries would look to him for guidance and strength. Many had seen rough times before, though nothing compared to the cataclysm that Horus had now unleashed upon them. Some were survivors of the Unification Wars, others the veterans of Lycaeus's rebellion. All of them were warriors, with the pride of the Legion in their hearts.
"We leave Istvan in defeat, he said, his words broadcast the length and breadth of the ship. It is not a pleasant feeling, but I want you to remember it. Take it into your hearts and nurture this sensation. Let it flow through your veins and fuel your muscles. Never forget what it feels like to fail.
He stopped for a moment, taking a breath, letting another emotion replace the hurt and the despair.
Do not give in to feelings of desperation. We are the Legiones Astartes. We are the Raven Guard. We have been bloodied, but we have survived. Take that sorrow and pound upon it with your anger until you have forged a new purpose. Those who we once called brothers.
Korax stopped again, the words catching in his throat as he said them. He glanced at Agapito, then Bran, then Solaro, and finally at Aloni. His commander's eyes were bright with emotion, jaws clenched with suppressed fury. The Primarch let out a growl, giving vent to feelings he had put aside since fleeing Istvan.
Those who we once called brothers are now our enemies. They have betrayed us, and worse still, they have betrayed the Emperor. They are dead to us, and we will not give them the dignity of our sorrow. Anger is all we shall have for them. Anger the likes of which we have never unleashed before. Only months ago, we still unleashed our fury in the name of enlightenment. We brought war to the galaxy in the name of the Imperial Truth. Those days have finished. The Great Crusade has been brought to an end by the treachery of those we now call foes. Hate them! Hate them as you have never hated an enemy before. Loathe the air they breathe and the ground upon which they tread. There is nothing so cowardly as a traitor, nor anything so worthy of our abhorrence. Hate them!
Pain flared through Korax's chest. In his agitation, he had opened up the wounds he had suffered, causing blood to trickle down his body. A normal man would have been slain by any one of these injuries, but the Primarch bore the pain without visible sign, stoically moving the agony to the back of his mind. Korax's hands were trembling, and he took a moment trying to bring some peace to his thoughts.
They tried to kill us, tried to annihilate the Raven Guard and erase us from the pages of history. But they made one mistake. They failed. We are bowed but not broken, wounded but not slain. I swear by my oaths to the Emperor and by my dedication to you that we will have revenge on those that have so wronged us. They will pay for their mistake with blood and death. And not until the last of them lies dead by our hand shall we know any measure of contentment or satisfaction. We will destroy them wherever we find them, as only the Raven Guard know how. Swear with me now, my children, to follow me wherever this road leads. Swear to show no mercy to the traitors. Swear to slay them with hatred in your heart. Swear to excise this cancer that Horus has nourished in the heart of the Imperium. Swear to bring again the Imperial Truth to the galaxy. Swear that we will never fail again.
Deep in the bowels of the Avenger, Alpharius listened to the Primarch's words and could not help but feel stirred by them. Such defiance was noble. Pointless, but noble.